You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Okay, guys, hey, Sam, Jay Jones here, Flash Gordon, and you are listening to the Flopcast. For real. I'm not teasing you.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 331.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflick.
Hi, Kevin.
And the mayor's here again.
Hello.
Hello to the mayor joining us for our Dragon Con review show.
Yes. Psyched for this.
I just got back from Dragon Con, remember?
I can't wait to hear all about this.
Yeah, we're going to talk all about it. That's the plan, and we'll see what happens. This is very timely of us, because I just got back like a couple of days ago. So we will get to Dragon Con very soon. First, however, you know what we need from you, Cornflick. That would be National Whatever Day.
There's something fun to celebrate on September 16th. Plato. Plato has its day. The interesting thing about Plato is that it originally was not a toy. Did you know this?
Oh, what was it for?
Developed in the 1930s, it was originally used to clean wallpaper. So it was a household cleaning supply. And in the 1950s, they decided, hey, if we put some colors in this, kids can play with it. And so it was originally released as red, yellow, and blue. And nowadays it comes in crazy colors like sparkly silver and purple, and about millions, perhaps even billions of tubs of the stuff have been sold.
And don't forget its final pure, perfect color, the dark grayish green. After it's all completely yanked together.
Going to ask where you stand on this. So I definitely played with Play-Doh as a kid. I would presume that you, Mayor, and Kevin both did too.
Yes, but I also remember making our own Play-Doh. Did you ever do that?
No.
I'm pretty sure we did that in kindergarten or something like that.
Because you could.
Yeah. You could make a similar product with flour and water and baking soda or something like that.
I discovered it was edible.
Oh.
And then just because you can eat it doesn't mean you should.
No. It's very salty, if I recall properly.
You've also tried.
Yeah, of course.
Had some for breakfast earlier today.
It really fills you up.
Yes.
So I was going to ask where you stand on this.
Were you the blending of colors?
Yeah. Because I was a color purist when it came to Play-Doh. I absolutely refused to mix the colors together. But I think I might have been like the odd one out. I think most people mixed their Play-Doh.
I think they get a little smudged together at first, and then eventually there's a point of no return, and then nobody cares anymore.
Right.
And then you have just one hideous, ugly color.
I think the things that I made out of Play-Doh probably would have looked a lot cooler had I mixed the colors. But just imagine, with the amount of Play-Doh that has been sold since it became a toy in the 1950s, if you were to weigh it all, it would weigh as much as at least 2,000 Statue of Liberties. That's how much Play-Doh has been sold in the world. And that doesn't even include the Play-Doh that we made at home. So there's a crazy amount of Play-Doh in this world. And
at least now we have a plan. We know what we want to do with it all. We're going to make 2,000
Statues of Liberty.
Statues of Liberty. Where are we going to put them? Are these all going to go out in the harbor with the original one?
I think they're going to need to, because seriously, where else would they go?
I think we need to plant them on 200 different planets and, like, prank people. Then put people on the planets and make them think that it's Earth, like in Planet of the Apes.
Have our own little Play-Doh Easter Islands with statues of Liberty.
Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
We could do all kinds of things, because we're going to make 2,000 of them. That's a lot of full-size Statues of Liberty to go around.
And September 16th is coming up quick, so we don't have much time. Let's get that Play-Doh.
I didn't know this had to all be done by the 16th.
To be timely and in order to celebrate, we've got deadlines to meet, people.
Wow, this is quite...
Let's get all the Play-Doh in one place.
This turned into quite a project all of a sudden.
Yeah, we don't even have time to record this show anymore. We've got to go get... We've got to round up the Play-Doh.
Get to work.
I want to send one to Mars for Robilar.
Yeah.
To enjoy. He needs a Statue of Liberty on Mars.
It's not like Earth fruit, though. He should not eat it.
He probably will.
He will. He definitely will. When he realizes it's made out of Play-Doh, they're all going to get eaten eventually. All two, maybe even the original one that's not made out of Play-Doh. We're going to eat every Statue of Liberty. That's the plan. Happy Play-Doh Day. Say, I just got back from Dragon Con.
Okay.
You did.
Yeah. It was lovely. There were people there. Several.
That's a lower turnout than I remember from last year.
You know, I think turnout, the number I heard was a little less than last year's. I don't know if this is accurate or not. I don't know if any of these numbers have ever been accurate, mm-hmm. but I think last year they said 82,000 was the official count, and this year it was closer to 80.
That's what I read as well, that it did not grow from last year. It was the same or a little bit less.
Which, from my perspective, fantastic.
No, that sounds good to me. We don't need more people.
I wouldn't object to a little more downsizing. This was probably just a minor dip, and then mm-hmm. it'll keep creeping up, I'm guessing. Interesting, though.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they've ever had a year where it went a little lower. And again, that might not even be accurate.
Sure.
At all. Who
when
knows?
You get up to that number, there's a little bit of, what, margin of error.
It's hard to count at some point. There were a lot, though. I saw a lot of people.
Well, so, you personally were not responsible for counting, so it's okay.
They did not put me in charge of counting. Not after last year, when I came back with 11. And they knew. That's way too low. So, you were not there this year. You've been many times.
Yes. I think last year I figured out how many times, but I've already forgotten.
Yeah, but you mercifully took a year off.
Every once in a while I need to take a break.
A recovery year.
Yes.
You were one of the missing 2,000.
That's it's my fault.
And Cornflake has yet to experience Dragon Con, but someday.
I have been experiencing the pull of Dragon Con for years, and as I've been thinking about it this year, the fact that it has a science track is so interesting to me.
I went to a thing on the science track this year. We'll get to that.
I can't wait to hear about it. I think that's going to be the Cornflake magnet. Despite how many other cool things there are, I don't think I could resist a science track.
There's several science tracks. There's one that's just called Science, and then there's Space, and there's Skeptics, and
there's the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
The Electronic Frontier Forum.
Science-y.
That falls under the science area as well, so there's a lot
science and technology.
A lot of science stuff going on. And the robotics also.
Oh, yeah.
Podcasting, I suppose. Part of that family.
How about the alternative history track? The steampunk?
Yes. That's not really science.
Oh, I guess not.
They probably get
science
into,
fiction.
I'll bet they get into some science stuff on the alternate history as well.
Yes.
And certainly plenty of science fiction going on.
It's all science.
It's all science. Because, yeah, as we've said, it's like 30-something, maybe even 40 different tracks mm-hmm. of programming. And some of them are science, some of them are science fiction, and all points in between. Most of the tracks I didn't even see. But I was down there for like a week, almost.
It seems to get longer every year.
This has turned into a long trip for me. But I was down there the Wednesday before Dragon Con starts. Dragon Con starts on the Thursday leading into Labor Day weekend. I was down there Wednesday again this year. And also there Wednesday was everybody else.
I was going to ask, now that Thursday is official, has Wednesday and Thursday picked up in population?
I think so. A lot more people were showing up on Wednesday because I had a nice dinner with a bunch of the American Sci-Fi Classics track people. We mm-hmm. had a little get-together Wednesday night, had dinner at a restaurant in the Marriott, one of the main Dragon Con hotels. And as we left dinner and just walked across the lobby, it was full. It was like the party is in full force. A giant crowded hotel lobby, and it's Wednesday night. And, I mean, costumes. People are in full costume. We saw a little of this last year on Wednesday. Because last year there was a group of, like, half-naked, body-painted Care Bears.
Okay.
Hanging around at that hotel on Wednesday night.
As they do on Wednesday nights.
I did not see the naked Care Bears this year.
Oh, that's too bad.
But I saw a lot of people in a lot of costumes. Big, big crowd on Wednesday.
I'd like to think that the naked Care Bears are there every Wednesday night. In my world.
Sure. In my heart.
Not part of Dragon Con at all. I heard that there
were people in costume on Tuesday, the day before. I don't know. I wasn't there.
Whoa. So it's safe to say people were excited about Dragon Con.
Absolutely. So that was Wednesday night. The best thing we saw Wednesday night was a girl walked by where we kind of found a quiet spot in one of the hotel lobbies. My goofy friends and I were just hanging out kind of late. And a girl walked by, and we stopped her and screamed at her to come back because we realized what she was carrying was a Borg Porg. She had from The Last Jedi.
Yes.
She had a toy Porg, those little cute thingies, but it had the headgear of a Borg attached to it. She made a Borg Porg.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Porg. Now that you've explained it, sounds cool, but initially when you say that as a phrase, it sounds like something you don't want to eat.
You could try it. Like we're all going to be assimilated eventually by the Borg Porg.
Borg Porg the other night. It wasn't fully cooked.
So that was Wednesday. I kind of relaxed a little bit Thursday early because the last couple of years I've gone and done something wacky on Thursday morning, mm-hmm. like before the tours start. Last year I went bird watching with our friend Kat in the rain, which was fun. And the year before that, I went to see the puppets, the Center for Puppetry Arts.
Yeah.
And I have friends who annually, that's their tradition, is every Thursday in the daytime, they go see the puppets because Atlanta is blessed with this remarkable Center for Puppetry Arts. And it's a complete, beautiful puppetry museum. And I hope you both get to visit sometime because it's the best. I was thinking about maybe going to the aquarium this year on Thursday morning, just because it's supposedly like one of the greatest aquariums in the world. And it's right there. It's a couple of blocks walk from the Dragon Con hotels. So I thought maybe I should go see the aquarium, but I didn't. I thought, you know, I got things to do. So I was kind of working on some panel prep stuff and just taking it easy Thursday, which was nice.
If I come down to Dragon Con next year, will you go to the aquarium with me?
Absolutely. We have to do the aquarium. And there's an official aquarium event during Dragon Con. Like, there's a Saturday night Dragon Con party at the aquarium. Chicken Joe, I believe, John Heater, and Michael Rosenbaum from Smallville, they hosted it. They host the event there, so those guys were there this year, and people love it. I've never gone because I'm busy. I can't leave Dragon Con Saturday night for a few hours to do that. But the people that do it love it, so that might be a thing for you when you get down there.
Might be.
Be among the fish people.
Yeah, I could be convinced to join you for that.
That's where I belong, you know.
Because Thursday afternoon, now I meet up with the newbie people for the walking tours, because I was a tour guide again this year. And I've done this, 4 years now or something? 4 or 5 years? Leading the tours, because people show up and we take them on guided tours all around Dragon Con.
I wish more cons would do this.
Well, there is no other con that's quite as spread out as
Dragon Con.
Yeah,
most of them don't need it. Dragon Con's so crazy in that it's spread across 7 different buildings, or 8, or whatever, depending on how you count.
Maybe I wish this was more common because I can't find my way out of a paper bag. But I guess most people don't need it.
Yeah, it's a very confusing layout, so it's nice to kind of be able to lead people around and point out where everything is. So we do that. So this year, it was supposed to start at 2:30, I think, officially, and people were pouring into the room as soon as we opened it, and we started the tours over an hour before we were scheduled to, because hundreds of people are filling this room, and we're an hour away from starting time, so hundreds more people are probably going to show up when it's actually supposed to be happening. So we started the tours as soon as we could.
Yeah, probably another function of people coming earlier and earlier each year.
So, yeah, I think next year we might officially start them earlier to try to accommodate how crazy it's getting. So Christine and I went out again. Christine's my wrangler every year. So I go out, I'm at the front of the line. She's at the back of the line, make sure we don't lose anybody. And we take out groups of 20. We did the walking tours, showed everybody around. Previous years, I've done either one or two tours, and which is more than enough because it's a workout. You know, my tour takes about 45 minutes, I think. And I've heard of tours being 30 minutes or even a little less, and I don't know how people move that fast.
Are they power walking through their tour?
Because you have to stop to explain everything.
Right.
You know, you can't really talk while you're moving because the 20th person in the line is too far back. So they have to kind of pick a spot where there's space, gather your people, talk, point some stuff out, and then you move again. So there's a lot of starting and stopping. Takes forever. But anyway, we did 3 tours this year, Christine and I personally.
Because you started early.
We started early, and we did 2 tours, which is plenty, but there were still people waiting to go out. So we thought, all right, you know, let's do it. Got to do it. There's people waiting. So I think in total, because we're not the only tour guys, of course, there's a whole team of people that do these tours. And I heard that over 500 people went on the walking tours this year. Because, I mean, I personally took out about 60, I think, because we did 3 tours. So, yeah, 500, 600 people, something like that. It's gotten pretty ridiculous. But hopefully,
you can't blame folks for wanting to know where they're going.
They've become very popular, and hopefully it helps when people actually start moving around on their own.
What a valuable service.
In fact, somebody who took our tours recognized Christine later in the weekend and waved her down to ask something.
Oh.
So we are available.
And she said, I'm not on duty anymore.
Yeah. You're dead to me.
Once a helper, always a helper.
So that was the tours. And the other event on Thursday for us was the ESO Network meet and greet. which was not, as we announced on the show that it was at the Hyatt Bar, it mm-hmm. moved. We were not at the Hyatt Bar.
So there were people over at the Hyatt Bar going, where's ESO?
People could find us if they wanted to. If you looked us up on the event page, you would have found us. But we were kind of a little more out of the way this year. And what happened is the alternate history people mm-hmm. were hosting like a 50s retro style tiki party by the pool.
I see where this is
at
going.
At the Sheraton. And of course, one of our ESO people is Mr. Tiki, you know, Mike Gordon from
yes.
Tiki Zombie. So Mike did not want to miss that party too. So we moved our party to be
adjacent
to their party. So ESO meet and greet was down by the pool at the Sheraton.
Well, that was accommodating of you.
It was fine.
I'm giggling because I love that adjacent partying is a thing.
Yes, yes. At one point, we did rumble. The two parties had to face off.
Yeah.
We had to declare a winner.
Like West Side Story?
Yeah, it was like The Outsiders.
Yeah, I was thinking Outsiders. The West Side Story is more musical.
Well, I was hoping people were singing.
Yeah.
Who'd we have there from ESO? Mike and Mike, of course, from Earth Station 1.
Did Mary. You get a good howdy?
Absolutely. When I saw Mike Gordon, of course, you get a big howdy out of Mike. Mary Ogle from Earth Station Who. Angela, the geek girl, was there. Ashley. I met Ashley for the first time. Actually, I met her earlier in the day. Ashley mm-hmm. Ashley went on one of my tours because this was her first Dragon Con.
Cool.
But Ashley, you hear Ashley doing the movie report during Earth Station 1. She was at her first Dragon Con. Oh, the cigar nerds were there. The Nerd Bliss crew was there. Got to talk to them. They're very funny as well. So, and I'm probably even skipping a few people. So a nice group of us got together and spent some quality time, you know, hanging out before things get too crazy on Friday. So I had a very weird start to Friday morning. I did a couple of weird things this year, weird new things that I've never done
before.
Don't
you always do weird things?
It's always a good idea to do weird new things when you're at Dragon Con. And I did a couple of things that were very weird for me. And one of them was, I thought, I wonder if I could do the Geek Girls Run.
Well, there's you're a, not a girl.
Already one strike against me. There's a group that does a run at Dragon Con every year. They meet on Friday morning, and there's a route that they have charted out, and they do a big run.
To me, this sounds extra crazy, because A, I don't want to run any time of year, and B, I especially don't want to run in the summer in Atlanta.
It's Atlanta. This is the last place you will. The first time I went to Atlanta was in the summer of 96, also mm-hmm. for Dragon Con and to see some friends of mine. And back then, Dragon Con was in June. It wasn't always on Labor Day weekend. But so this was before the Olympics. The city was getting ready for the 96
yeah.
Summer Olympics when I was there. So I was driving around with my friends, and I saw that the street that we were driving down had this big, weird, multicolored stripe painted down the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what's that about? Why is the street painted like that? And they said, oh, that's for the Olympic marathon.
Oh.
And I could barely walk around in Atlanta in June, and I
sure.
thought, they're going to have a marathon down
yeah.
here. Everybody's going to die. So now flash forward to all these years later. Now I was seriously considering running myself, not a marathon,
no.
but I think the Geek Girls Run, someone said it was about 2.5 miles.
And that 2.5 miles is a corridor of sprinklers, I hope.
Let's hope. So about a tenth of a marathon, if you will. I have been doing some running this year. I've been going out in the mornings all summer and running, doing like 5Ks or 4 miles or so.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got some running under my belt already this year. However, I've been running super early in the morning when it's cool out. You
yeah.
know, 6 a.m, I'm out there through the summer in Massachusetts and no hills.
Right.
I've been running on a flat, cool Massachusetts surface at 6 a.m. So I was a little worried because now we're talking Atlanta at 9 a.m. and it's Atlanta,
right.
which is hot and humid and crazy. And this is a very hilly area. These hotels, Dragon Con is on pretty steep hills
mm-hmm.
in places. So I wasn't sure how this was going to go. I wasn't sure if I could do it. Should I do it? So I go out Friday morning,
uh-huh.
and the weather was lovely. I walked outside. It was 75 degrees out
oh.
and did not feel humid. So I thought, all right, this is on. We're doing this. So it's the Geek Girls Run, they call it. Not just for girls. All are welcome at the Geek Girls Run. I think it started as a group called Geek Girls, which is
mm-hmm.
why it's the Geek Girls Run. But there were maybe, I don't know, 50 people hanging out at the starting line. When I got there, it starts right outside the Marriott, and I didn't think I was going to know anybody there, because, you
mm-hmm.
know, I don't hang out with a bunch of runners at Dragon Con. But I was wrong, because I recognized people that were there. I recognized Jason and Rita from here on the ESO Network. Those are the folks that do transmissions from Atlantis,
mm-hmm.
and they're filmmakers now. They made a movie this year. They made a real movie. They have a movie called Seekers of the Lost Worlds, and it's been playing at festivals.
Oh, neat.
And it's on Vimeo now, I think. It's starting to appear on streaming services. So cool. I have not seen it yet, but I definitely want to check it out when I can. Anyway, Jason and Rita were there for the Geek Girls run, so I got to hang out with them. And also Jessie, a lady I met there who works with Jason and Rita on, I think she worked on the movie. She works on Transmissions from Atlantis stuff, so I got to hang out with them. And Jessie became like my running buddy because we determined that we'd be moving at about the same speed. We were going for like a moderate running speed because they break people into, are you just going to walk it? Are you going to run crazy fast? Are you going to run moderate? So I thought, that sounds good. Let's run moderate. So,
what about the group that's going to curl up on the sidewalk and take a nap?
That's the, yes, that's the final group. Yes, they are welcome at the Geek Girls Run also, the napping group.
You could just stay in your hotel room for that, probably.
There were people in costume for the run.
Hope that they were not heavy costumes.
In one case, yes.
That's
there was
crazy.
One pretty heavy costume who did the whole run successfully, but it was some kind of a knight. Like, oh. I don't know if it was a Monty Python and the Holy Grail knight or something
did
like that.
Did he have coconuts?
No.
Please tell me. That would have been the best thing.
I'm not sure if it was a Monty Python knight, but it was some kind of a knight-type costume. And in fact, at one point, this knight was ahead of me, and then as I was about to run by, and then I heard, could someone help me, please? So I stopped, and one of the knight's shoes was untied.
Oh, no.
Sorry. Hard to bend down.
Yeah. Couldn't get to it in the armor, you know. So I stopped for a quick shoe tying.
Oh, very kind of you.
Not something I was planning to do during the weekend was tie a knight's shoe during the Geek Girls run.
So that's a new weird thing number two.
Yeah. So anyway, it was fine. We did the run, like 2.5 miles, and I had enough time in my schedule to recover. You know, I wasn't due on stage immediately after the run. I had like an hour buffer time to recombobulate.
Mm. I'm so proud of you exercising at the start of the day.
Me too.
It was good. You know, nice people. So yeah, I would recommend try the Geek Girls run. Unless it's like 98 degrees out or something, then maybe not. But at 75, I could totally handle it. Look, this is I got my Dragon Con badge here. Mm-hmm. See, they gave me a ribbon.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. And it goes with the Robilar ribbon very nicely.
I've got the Flopcast Robilar ribbon, of course, on my badge. And then the other ribbon I have is the Geek Girls Run Dragon Con 2018.
Nice.
And yes, I'm officially a geek girl now. Got the ribbon to prove
it. It's about time.
So I had to, after my recombobulation time, I was due to moderate the Arrow panel after that. So that was in the American Sci-Fi Fantasy Media track, and we were talking about the season of Arrow, the TV show, which was cool. Look what I found, though, in the track room when I got there. These are new this year.
Oh.
They had these fancy, full-color printed, like the thing with your name on it that sits on the stage. The name card. Yeah, they'd never done these before. The American Science Fiction Fantasy Media track had these for all their speakers this year, which were beautiful.
Excellent.
Very nice. And I, at the end of the weekend, after they were done with mine, I got to bring it home to Chickentown. So here it is. Because the tracks all run kind of differently.
Sure.
Like each track is its own little fiefdom where each director kind of does things. So Kelly, who runs that track, did these name things this year. Whereas I know like in the podcasting track room, they have these things in front of you, in front of the seats on the stage, but they're like dry erase. So they wipe them down, and then people write in their name or their Twitter or whatever on them.
Oh, that's very clever and a nice way to save paper.
Yeah, that works nicely too. And then there are tracks that just don't use them. I mean, the classics track, it would just be too insane to try to label us all.
You need a panel behind you on a big screen.
The classics track, it's just bedlam. The skeptic track, they run that like a professional TV studio. So they have monitors and they'll have people's names just coming up on the monitors when they're close up on the cameras.
I forgot about that.
They're super fancy in the skeptic track room. Arrow panel was fun, talking about Arrow. A couple of panelists on that I knew from the Wonder Woman panel last year, the one that we played on the show.
Excellent.
Yeah, Jenny was there and Cammy. Cammy was the woman in the beautiful Amazon costume last year. She was on the Arrow panel. I think she does an Arrow podcast, I believe. And a woman named Susan Griffith, who I worked with her husband later in the weekend, but Susan and Clay Griffith have written a couple of official tie-in novels for Arrow and for Flash, the TV series.
I didn't know such a thing existed.
I didn't know either, and now I want to read them.
Yeah.
Because they seem like very cool people. And when that panel was over, actually in the room waiting to say hi to me was our friend Mariana. You know,
Lady O
from back on Dementia Radio. Mariana tracked me down. She knew where to find me. You know, she looked me up in the schedule. I don't think she cares about Arrow, but she knew, here's where I can find the goofball from the Flopcast. So I caught up with Mariana right after Arrow. Then I went running over to one of the big ballrooms because I saw the Sesame Street reunion panel.
Nice.
One of them. They did several, I think, throughout the weekend to catch everybody.
With the big guests, yeah, they try to sprinkle those throughout the weekend so everyone gets a chance.
So, Cornflake, this was Sesame Street reunion.
I have so been wanting to hear about this.
Yes, this was good. So they had Emilio Delgado was there, who played Luis.
Yes, yeah.
And Bob McGrath was there, who played Bob. And Carol Spinney was there, you know, Big Bird and Oscar the Grouch. Roscoe Orman, who played Gordon, was supposed to be there, but this was Friday, still early, and he was still traveling. I think his flight might have been delayed. But I did see him later in the weekend. I saw him around in the autograph area. And Deborah Spinney, we should say, was on the panel as well. Mm-hmm. Deborah is Carol Spinney's wife. And if you've seen the documentary, you've seen Deborah.
Yeah.
And she's fantastic.
They're very sweet.
Just what a crazy treat, you know, to see that lineup on stage.
I bet they got so much love.
Oh, man. All weekend long, I'm sure. And I know Carol's been there before, but this was the first. I've never heard of any of these people being at any convention anywhere before. I'm sure they have, and I just wasn't aware of it. But I was not aware of these folks even doing conventions. But they were very busy all weekend, though, because they were doing little reunion panels like this. And also, every time I walked through the celebrity autograph area, they were just mobbed.
I bet.
You know, people could not wait to meet them.
I have an autographed picture of Mr. Hooper. I don't know if this has
come
on the Flopcast before, but a friend of the family, who I believe was a kindergarten teacher, got the chance to meet the actor who played Mr. Hooper and got an autographed photo for me when he was still alive.
I had no idea. Mr. Hooper came up during the panel, actually. They definitely started talking about him and how they handled the death on the show and all that. So I actually sneaked out of Sesame Street a little early because I wanted to get over to the puppetry of Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Oh, yes, because we have a friend over there. We
definitely had a friend on that panel. And this was not in one of the big ballrooms. This was in the puppetry track room, which is a decent-sized room, but not a giant room. But this was Joel Hodson from MST3K was going to be on this panel, as well as our buddy Grant. So I figured a lot of people are going to show up for this, you know. So I got there early. I got in line outside the puppetry room. Then I got a text from my friend Kat, or Kate. I always call her Kat. I think she goes by Kate more. I'm going to try to say Kate. We'll see if I can see if I can succeed for the rest of the recording. And Kate is our friend who does the Strange Animals podcast, and old friend of mine from years and years back. And I always like to hang out with her at Dragon Con. Kate sends me a text, trying to figure out when am I free later that evening, when can we get together. So we're trying to work that out. We're texting back and forth, trying to figure out when our schedules can possibly connect later that day. Then I happen to mention that right now I'm in line outside the puppet room for the MST3K thing. It turns out she was standing 10 feet away from me the whole time. She was like one row over in the line. She's like, look to your right. So that was a goofy meetup with Kate. But it reminded me, though, if you remember like 2 years ago when she texted me at the beginning of Dragon Con.
Banana.
Do you want a banana? That was the first message I got. The answer was yes, as I recall.
Why do I remember this?
Anyway, weird thing about that banana incident when she brought me the banana, we were standing in that exact same place. That was standing right outside the puppet room.
So you were having banana deja vu?
Yes. I have a weird meetup with Kate every year right outside the puppet room. Anyway, as soon as we got inside, Grant was standing there. So I finally got to see our friend Grant, you know, from Throwing Toasters. And I've known Grant since Alcon way back in the day.
I think I met him at Dementia 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that would be where I met him as well.
Sure. And of course, he's so busy these days with puppetry and podcasting and all his various projects.
But I remember when he used to come on my humble radio show at the college radio station.
I'm sure he still would.
And yeah, your band, Sponge Awareness Foundation, has performed with Throwing Toasters.
We all did a big show together some years back. Cornflake put together a show. That was like Cornflake's Big Coffee and Cartoons.
It was Coffee and Cartoons Live.
Live. And it was you were hosting, and it was my band, Sponge Awareness, and our buddy Dan Hart, and Grant with Throwing Toasters.
That was so much fun.
What a show.
Just last night,
it was in a church basement, wasn't it?
It was. Because I know how to pick a venue.
Yes.
Like somewhere out in what? Lunenburg?
It was in Lunenburg, Massachusetts.
Oh, it's all coming back to me now.
Yes.
Just last night, we watched the documentary that's included on the latest season of Mystery Science Theater, the one that was on Netflix. And there's a lot of Grant in that because they talk to the puppeteers, the people doing the voices of Tom Servo and Crow. But yeah, the Grant featured pretty heavily in that.
Yeah, that was very cool seeing Grant in the making of documentary just last night. And at this panel, so the panel started with Joel. It was just Joel on stage, and he had slides because he was showing slides of like old catalogs that he used to order puppets out of when he was a kid. And he had photos of him as a kid and as a teenager with puppets that he bought or that he started building.
Adorable.
Yeah, so he went through his early history with puppets. And then he brought Grant and also another guy named Tim up on stage to join him because Grant works the Crow puppet. Grant works Crow. This other guy, Tim, works Tom Servo for the new season. So they had the actual bots with them.
Mm-hmm.
This was the same room where a couple of years ago we saw the gopher from Caddyshack.
Yes.
The guy was working the gopher. Exactly where that guy was this year, Grant was in that exact same spot in the same room with Crow.
Very neat.
It was so exciting. And Mariana showed up at that as well. So me and Mariana and Grant and Kate all got to have a quick hello after that panel. And that was great. And I think that's about all I saw of the MST3K people all weekend. I never ran into Jonah or any of the rest of the MST3K crowd. So I'm glad I got to the puppetry panel. That was excellent. After that was my next panel, which was Classic Sci-Fi Legends. You know, our big memorial panel every year. So I brought a computer with me for the first time this year, actually. Well, I brought your computer.
Last
year you brought your computer just so that I could use it. This year I brought a computer for the first time because I had the PowerPoint slides set up for the memorial panel. I had a nice slide for each person that we talked about. It's always a nice panel.
Mm-hmm.
I think I may have tried to put too many people in it, though.
Oh, boy.
I hate to leave anybody out, which I do. You know, a lot of people don't make the cut, but I still had like about 85 people, I think, to get through
in a
60-minute panel. So and some of them only need a few seconds. You know, there's a lightning round aspect to a lot of this. Some people just need a quick glance. Okay, yep, I remember them. They were great. Moving along. You know, but there were some people that got the short end of the stick that could have deserved a little more time because we were kind of rushing at one point, but a minor point.
So you need to tell the celebrities less of you need to die next year. There's only so many of you we can cover.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they've started already, you know, with Burt Reynolds just as we record. It was just in the last couple of days and Bill Daly.
I saw that.
We're building a new list already. I had to add people. Thankfully, I had the computer with me because I was adding people
at
Dragon Con. Yeah, like the day before, the morning before the panel, I had to add a couple of comic book creators.
And didn't Neil Simon die right before Dragon Con?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there were some right up to the end and during. So we got everybody in anyway. It's a nice panel. And we do our version of it here on the Flopcast in January, of course.
Longest show of the year.
Longest show of the year, of course. We hit the 2-hour mark this past year, as I recall. I had another panel right after that. That was Krypton. Mm-hmm. Krypton, Black Zero, and Zods back over in the science fiction fantasy media room. And that went well, talking Krypton, because I finally got caught up. I still had like 2 episodes to go that had been...
Yeah.
Got to finish this series before I go talk about it at Dragon Con. I was slow to appreciate that show. I spent the whole season trying to figure out if I like it or not.
Yeah. Did you ultimately decide that you do?
I'm still working it out.
You're still working on it. Yeah, I bailed
on
that one.
There's a lot to really like about it. Yeah, there's a lot that's really cool about it. And Brainiac is super cool on it. They have a great new version of Brainiac. A lot of good stuff, but it's very dark and serious. So you can kind of wear you down in just how dark and serious. And they're trying to be a little kind of Game of Thronesian. But overall, it's nicely done.
Yeah, like political intrigue on Krypton and stuff like that.
Yeah, the families battling each other, that kind of stuff, you know, and you can only take so much of that. It's like, come on, I want to see Superman.
And you're not going to, because it's his grandfather.
Yes. Superman's like 200 years in the future. Anyway, that was Krypton. Next panel after that I went to, I was not on it because my name is not Michael, but I was in the room for the greatest Michaels and Michelles in classic sci-fi.
Nice.
The Council of Michaels, if you will.
And that was one of the Rolla panels, right?
That was a Rolla panel, yeah. And this came out of the fact that so many people named Michael are involved in the American Sci-Fi Classics track at Dragon Con.
Mike and Mike from ESO, for starters.
Yeah. There's a bunch of them. So they thought, let's just have a Michael-themed panel. So they gathered as many Michael or Michelle or Miguel people as they could find. The final count for the panel itself, it was all Michaels. Mm-hmm. It was 6 Michaels.
Okay.
Yeah. You had Mike Faber, Mike Gordon from ESO, Michael Faulkner, another friend of ours, Michael French from Retroblasting, and Michael Williams, who I did a lot of stuff with this week. And yeah, he's a writer as well. I think that was...
Michael Bailey?
Michael Bailey, yes. I'm sorry. I knew I was forgetting. Of course, Michael Bailey.
Very good friend of the Flopcast.
Fortress of Baileytude, absolutely. So I think that was the six Michaels who were actually on the panel. Meanwhile, Joe Crow, track director, asked to see how many Michaels and Michelles do we have in the audience. And he brought them all up to the front row.
Nice.
So we had the whole front row was Michaels and one Michelle.
And yeah, the VIM section. Very important, was, Michael.
This was it, which I somehow sneaked into because I was sitting in the front row already.
Yeah, well, that's because that's kind of where you sit.
I was afraid they were going to kick me out.
Wait,
but...
so you left as Flopcast host Kevin and you came back as a geek girl named Michael?
Yes. It was a weird weekend, okay? I'm still trying to work a few things out. If one more Michael had shown up, I would have gotten kicked out of the front row.
Yeah. You'd have been a Michael runner-up.
But yeah, this was a roller panel in that they have a big 20-sided die. This thing, you've seen these things. It's like the size of a volleyball, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, big, beautiful 20-sided die that this guy makes special for the Classics track. And this was every spot on the die had a Michael on it, like Michael J. Fox, Michael Caine, Michael Keaton, and some Michelles as well. Michelle Pfeiffer was on it. Who?
Michael Rutherford?
Michael Rutherford from Mike and the Mechanics?
Yes.
You bet Mike Rutherford was on it. No, I don't think so. As we discussed earlier, because they didn't put us in charge, they did not include Mike and the Mechanics. They did include my idea for the combo spot, though. They had the combo spot for Mike Myers. Mm-hmm. Mike Myers from SNL and Wayne's World and Michael Myers from the Halloween movies. The guy that makes those dice, his name is Michael.
Awesome.
And they also determined the proper collective noun for a group of Michaels. How should we refer to a group of Michaels? Some genius realized it should be a drop of Mikes.
Yes.
Oh.
And they took a beautiful group shot photo at the end as well, where they brought up all the mics from the front row and all the panelists, and they held a boom mic hanging over them.
And then they dropped it on somebody's head.
Not all the mics survived. So that was the Council of Michaels. It was very silly and quite ridiculous, and I loved it. I did pop back into the Classics track room late that night for Kiss. The Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park movie that they were showing for charity. That's the thing where you pay your way out.
Yeah, did you watch any of the movie?
No, I didn't stick around for the movie. I came in, they were still doing a little panel about it when I dropped in. There were some panelists up there, including a fully dressed, fully outfitted Ace Frehley costume guy was up there. And there was a Gene Simmons costume in the audience sitting in the front row. I think they came in together. But I just kind of ducked in real quick, saw some people, took a picture. But it wasn't until I got home and started looking at my pictures that I realized that Ace Frehley that was up there said, I know that guy. Didn't recognize him in the moment, you know, because he was painted like Ace Frehley. But that was Ruby. Ruby Renesco, as in Ruby and Jennifer Rose,
yeah.
The kind of costume couple that they appear a lot of conventions together. Great, great costumers.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
And he also performs in a Kiss tribute band, I believe.
Nice.
Yeah, but I didn't see either one of them all weekend, except for, it turns out, I did see Ruby on stage, didn't know it was him, but I never saw Jennifer all weekend. But there's a long list of people I never saw all weekend.
Yeah.
Anyway, they did their Kiss fundraising event, which was cool. If you want to leave this movie, this horrible Kiss movie from 1978, please make a donation at the door. That's the plan, because they raised some money for the Dragon Con charity. Yeah, I was just out wandering around super late after that Friday night. Hooked up with our buddies Martha and Brittany from Wicked Geeky. And that's kind of the move. We kind of find each other very late every night at Dragon Con, and we're hanging out. You know how that goes. So late night out with our friends. And a little too late, I think, because I had to get up early again Saturday morning.
This was the important Saturday morning panel.
Saturday morning. Here's the other weird thing I did for the first time. Did the Geek Girl Run Friday.
Uh-huh.
Saturday morning, because it is Saturday morning, that's when we did our Schoolhouse Rock 45th anniversary panel. Schoolhouse Rock, that's what's happening. So, of course, I'm on this panel back in the Classics track room. And as we hinted in earlier Flopcast episodes, I decided to, for the first time ever, I would wear a costume at Dragon Con. And I've never been in a costume before at Dragon Con. I'm the one person in the history of Dragon Con who's never put on a costume.
Even I did it a couple years ago.
However, and this kind of started as a joke, I think, in the planning stages of the Schoolhouse Rock panel.
Mm-hmm.
And we were watching the Cloris Leachman video. And if I hope everyone listening probably knows, when Schoolhouse Rock was released on VHS in the 80s, they added this introduction song, live action. It's Cloris Leachman.
Yes.
TV's Cloris Leachman, totally dressed in this goofy 80s outfit, and a bunch of little kids, and they're all just singing and dancing together. Not well.
No.
I love Cloris Leachman. She's a great, great performer. I don't think she's known for her singing voice.
Right.
Unlike the woman she replaced on Facts of Life. Charlotte Wright.
Charlotte Wright and Charlotte can sing, yes. And this was the Facts of Life era, I believe. This was Facts of Life era Cloris Leachman who did this Schoolhouse Rock thing, because this must have been around 86, I go, 86, 87 maybe, when they did these. Anyway, it kind of as a joke, it started. It might have been you. Did you say you should wear a Cloris Leachman costume?
I'll take the credit.
I think it was you. We can give credit or blame for this, but it kind of snowballed into maybe I will do that. Okay, so I did it. I assembled a Cloris Leachman from Schoolhouse Rock costume, and I showed up for this panel in costume. And I'm pretty sure most people in the room had no idea what my costume was. However, you also did something else for us. Mm-hmm. The mayor put together a DVD of the Cloris Leachman song from those old VHS tapes.
Yes, I used our technology to burn that onto a DVD.
Because the modern Schoolhouse Rock DVD collections do not include the Cloris Leachman footage.
It should be an Easter egg or something.
Right. It sounds horribly bereft.
Felicity saved the panel by creating a Cloris Leachman DVD, which we did indeed show at the top of the panel, and then people could recognize that, yes, this maniac on stage is dressed as Schoolhouse Rock Cloris Leachman.
You cosplayed as Cloris Leachman.
Had to do it.
Oh my goodness. I'm holding my brain in so it doesn't just explode.
Yeah, we will definitely have to include those pictures in the show notes.
Sad to say there is photographic evidence that this happened.
Someone made sure. And other people showed up in costume too.
I was not the only costumer on the panel because my friend Sue, and I love Sue, and she's so crazy busy at Dragon Con every year, but Sue does the Women at Warp Star Trek podcast, as well as many other things. And Sue dressed up as the woman, the blonde cartoon woman from Suffer Until Suffrage, dances around singing about, you know, your women's right to vote in Schoolhouse Rock. Sue was dressed like that one with the big star on her shirt.
I thought you were going to tell me that everyone dressed up like Cloris Leachman.
Right, when you said you're not the only one.
That's right. You were not the only Cloris Leachman in the room.
An army of Clorises.
And there was also a great Conjunction Junction costumer came to see the panel as well.
That's so a cool
there
costume.
There are pictures of all of us together. Now, the night before, late Friday night, I ran into a wonderful Schoolhouse Rock costume group, totally separate from the panel. But this was a Conjunction Junction. And I'm Just a Bill, a Schoolhouse Rocky, you know, the superhero.
Yes.
And a woman was from Interjections, the Wow Girl, holding up the giant rainbow Wow lettering over her head. The four of them I found together in the lobby of the Hyatt late Friday night.
Did you beg them to come to your panel?
I checked to see, do you know there's a Schoolhouse Rock event here tomorrow morning? And they knew about it, but they were in the parade.
That makes sense.
We're doing the parade because Schoolhouse Rock panel competed with the big Dragon Con parade.
Yes.
So I'm sorry they couldn't join us, but I am happy that they got to entertain hundreds of thousands of people on the streets of Atlanta.
Nice. They were kind of like a walking advertisement for people who wanted to go inside.
Yes, everybody abandon the parade right now. Go inside. You're missing Schoolhouse Rock. So Schoolhouse Rock was great, of course. And it was a panel at first, and then it just kind of devolved into, we just want to watch these cartoons.
Yes. No,
which is how I thought it should go. Mm-hmm. I'm like, we're talking about these cartoons. Nobody wants to listen to us just yammering on and on about these cartoons when we could just be watching the actual cartoons. So that's what we did. Yeah, we watched all the classics, of course. You know, you gotta hit the big ones. Mm-hmm. We watched maybe, I don't know, 6 or 8 of the cartoons during the panel as well. Super fun. Oh, I went to the secret food court after that.
On Saturday?
Secret food court for the first time ever. Dragon Con has a big main food court, and it's kind of right between a couple of the hotels, so it's jam-packed and crazy and crowded all weekend. But there's also a secret food court. Kind of branches off one of the hotels. They're all connected. You don't even have to go outside. But one of these sky bridges that connects these buildings connects over to the SunTrust Bank building, and there's another food court over there. The secret food court.
Has it done a good job staying a secret?
No.
Oh.
It's always been a pretty big secret, and it's a secret that I share with my tour groups every year.
Mm-hmm.
I actually stop my tour outside the sky bridge to the secret food court, and I show my people where the secret food court is. And the problem with the secret food court, they were not open for the weekend. So you could go there on Thursday and Friday, but then you can't go. They're closed the rest of the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, and of course the Monday holiday. This year, the secret food court decided we're going public because they started advertising. We will be open for Dragon Con on Saturday. So they were open Saturday for the first time. And it's not a big secret anymore
because
they had signs in the corridors, in the sky bridges, and in the walkways
SunTrust
saying, they didn't call it the secret food court.
Yeah.
But there were like signs, hey, SunTrust Food Court, open today. And I was like, hey, you know, would you mind?
I'm just picturing you like grabbing all the signs I should have and crumpling grabbed the them signs. Up and throwing them away.
Or like redirecting them.
Yeah, pointed arrows pointing the wrong way.
Like in Labyrinth.
It's enough of a labyrinth in there already.
So changing it to say, there is no other
food
court.
Yeah. So it was still way less crowded than the big main food court. So still worth going over there. But yeah, I was a little disappointed in the fact that it's not such a big secret anymore.
I'm picturing you walking into the room and all of the people that were on your tours looking up and going, hi, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm responsible for a big chunk of the crowd in the secret food court, I think, every year.
They should be paying you for advertising.
Well, I'm surprised it didn't catch on. I mean, I can understand that if their workers aren't used to working on Saturday, they have to make an effort. But yeah, they must make they could make so much money.
Yeah, it's always a surprise that there was just a shut down food court adjacent, directly connected to Dragon Con every year. They've expanded to Saturday, at least.
Nice.
And they're putting up signs.
I've had a pretty good veggie burger there.
Yeah, there's some pretty good stuff in there. Not a giant food court, but there's some good stuff. So I went over there after Schoolhouse Rock, actually, with Michael Bailey and Joe Crow. Track director Joe Crow actually got to leave the room. And we went over and got some lunch from Dunkin' Donuts. In the secret Dunkin' Donuts, you know.
Yeah.
You want to feel like you're back in New England.
Sure,
There's a Dunkin' Donuts in the secret food court. And actually, something came out of that conversation that we had over lunch. It was so nice to just have, you know, spend time with those guys.
Yeah.
Usually I see them and we're running on and off of stages.
Just business.
Yes, all business. So, yeah, it was nice that we got to hang out. Have some Dunkin' Donuts. But something came out of that conversation that would come into play a couple of days later that was one of the weirdest things that happened. Anyway, I did a Gotham panel after that back in the sci-fi fantasy media room. Gotham Season 4, Let's Go Crazy. That was cool. Some good costumers showed up for that panel, like in Gotham style, a Riddler, Gotham style Penguin, and Court of Owls costume people were there. And there was also a Harley Quinn right in the front row who was contributing a lot to the conversation, and she was awesome. And then it turns out her name is Ashley. She's actually part of the official social media team for Gotham.
Oh.
Yeah, so she had a lot to contribute. You know, she knows what's really going on.
Interesting.
Yeah, so she was cool. That was a fun panel. We did Rolla panel after that. So there's the Michael-themed Rolla panel Friday. Saturday, we did classic sci-fi Rolla panel. Specifically, most of the stuff on the 20 Sided Die were things from 1978 and 1998.
Pertaining to people named Mike?
This was...
you reused the die.
Relatively Michael-free. Yeah, it was a different... Sorry, we only have the one Michael die, so we're going to have to...
Yeah, adapt.
The guy made two completely different sets of D20s for us this year, which they auction at the end of the weekend.
Yeah.
That's another way they raise money for the Dragon Con charity, is they auction those beautiful 20-sided dice every year. But Rolla panel is always crazy because we have, I don't know, there must have been like a dozen panelists on stage. That's all hands on deck. Everybody who's available from Joe and Gary's team fill the stage, and we all just scream about whatever silly things come up on the dice. This was like Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. Oh, Hardware Wars came up. Bunch of goofy stuff. I went to my one science panel of the weekend after that, and that was called Last Jedi Science. So this was a bunch of panelists, actually, you know, scientists and science communicators talking about the science of the Last Jedi movie. So a lot of Porg talk, of
course. Blue milk.
The blue milk comes up. Those creatures, they knew what they were called, but the things that make Luke's blue milk.
Yeah.
And really trying to work out scientifically, is there any logic to any of this? Mm-hmm. It gets very silly and very funny, but at the same time, they're making their points, you know, just injecting some real science into the conversation. Oh, that salt planet, the planet covered in salt, with those crystal ice fox things running around.
Yes.
They get into that. How do those things work?
Ice foxes, how do they work?
A lot of discussion over whether or not you should eat porgs.
No.
They were surveying the audience.
I'm not the only one who thinks that porg sounds like a food.
Yeah, well, Chewbacca certainly helped himself to a porg in the movie, but then felt guilty about it afterwards.
Yeah, and let them move into the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, so a lot of porg talk. Should you barbecue a porg? They were surveying the audience and then making their arguments and seeing if the panelists had swayed anyone's opinions about eating porgs.
Shouldn't eat undercooked porg.
That's right. But
for sure.
We knew people on this panel, though. Mm-hmm. This is Dr. Rachelle Burks, you know, Dr. Rubidium. She was on that panel. We know her from Skeptic from back in the day. And Bethany, who goes by PsyCurious. I met her last year, another science writer, science communicator. She was there, Bethany, and also our friend Emily. also called Celix, yes, in the costuming world. But Emily Fink is another great science communicator and friend of ours from Skeptic and Mad Art Lab.
Always great to see her cosplay,
too. Yeah, fantastic costumes, of course, from Emily all weekend. So that was my science panel. I saw some science for once.
Science sighting.
Later that night, I saw, you know, they do, normally, there's a big Gonzaroo comedy show. They're called, they call it the Gonzaroo Show. And it's a big comedy variety show, and this is where they'll have, like, Paul and Storm, if they weren't there this year. But ordinarily, they have that kind of act, Paul and Storm, Jonathan Colton, Joseph Scrimshaw, who also was not there this year. But all the comedians and kind of nerd performers, a lot of them do the big Gonzaroo show.
Mike Furman.
Furman is there, yeah, some years, sure, Double Clicks, even some of the Riff Tracks guys, you know, that whole crowd. And last year, Kate and I went to Gonzaroo. And I was thinking, this is kind of the same show as the year before. And
then
I was thinking, oh, yeah, yeah. So, you know, so I was thinking, like, maybe next year, maybe 2018, I'll skip the Gonzaroo show to go do something else. I did end up ducking into Gonzaroo this year because they didn't do a regular Gonzaroo show. Instead, they did Gonzaroo Presents Tom Kenny and the High Seas. And this is Tom Kenny, as in the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants, you know, great voice actor. He fronts a big band. He has a band called Tom Kenny and the High Seas. And I think some friends of ours have seen him perform out in California.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I've seen reports of, like, TV's Kyle and that gang.
Sounds like their kind of thing.
Yeah, going to Tom Kenny shows. But Tom has a band, a big, big, big band. He has three guys on saxophone.
Whoa.
And he has three women singing backup and a whole full band. It's like jump blues and swing and 50s kind of rock.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of stuff. And he's just leaping around. You know, he can work the room. Super fun show. I recommend, if you can. I don't think he tours very often because he's probably usually very busy with his voice work.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, he broke a mic stand. I think it was a mic stand. He broke something on stage. But he started apologizing to the sound crew. And he said, I'll pay for it. I'll pay for it. Don't worry. I've got sponge bucks.
Yep. Sponge money.
You should have sponge money, too.
I should have sponge money. Where's my sponge money? From my band, the Sponge Awareness Foundation. Tom Kenny has all the sponge money.
Not fair.
I got a Turks from Kate after that because she was going to see the Double Clicks later that night. So I thought, all right, I'll go meet up with Kate, go see the Double Clicks because we love the Double Clicks. I ran into Angela again. She was also waiting to go see the Double Clicks. Angela, the geek girl from... Mm-hmm. Earth Station 1. And it turns out Angela has worked with the Double Clicks. I didn't realize that.
Because
Angela plays ukulele as well.
That's right.
Yeah, she's a musician. And they'd actually worked on something together.
Cool.
So we all go in. And the Double Clicks have been to Dragon Con a number of times in the past. Mm-hmm. This was the first time the Double Clicks had a big main stage late night concert of their own. And I've seen them many times. And they're great. They're always great. We love them. But they stepped it up this year. Like, they thought, we're doing a big main stage Dragon Con show. They got, like, special sparkly suits to wear for it.
Sparkly Double Clicks?
They were sparkly Double Clicks. And, they were fantastic, of course. Probably the best show I've seen them do. They were great. Yeah. It felt weird because we went in as soon as they opened and we were right up front, like standing right in front of the stage, like at a rock show. And
that's where we like to be in that big room.
But it felt weird for the Double Clicks standing up against the front of a big stage. But it was good. Turks did with the girls after that, found out where Martha and Brittany and Jessica, our friends from Wicked Geeky, where they were. And it turns out they were at the Heroes and Villains Ball, which was one of the big major
dances. Yeah, you
going
don't
on.
Dance.
No, that's the thing. So I went over there. It was the first time I'd entered the Westin all week. And I thought, maybe I'll just pop in and say hi, you know, as I'm wandering around. So I go in, crazy loud music, DJs up there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A very, very popular dance every year, the Heroes and Villains Ball at Dragon Con. And Brittany or Martha, they see me, wave me over. And it's like, good to see them. But they're dancing.
Yeah.
And you know me.
No.
Right. You're having none of it.
I just don't dance. And so, all right, I said a quick hello. And I said, I'm just going to kind of drift away here, you know, because they're good. They're doing their thing.
I'll have to go dance with them next year.
You totally should. Anyway, I figured they're not even going to notice, you know.
Right.
They're dancing. They're good. Well, it turns out they did. I heard about it the next day. What happened to you? You looked at your phone and then you just walked away. So I was caught sneaking out of the Heroes and Villains Ball.
You are the opposite of that Wham song. You should never wake Kevin up before you go. Do not take him dancing tonight.
All right, let's move. Sunday morning, I went to a couple more of the celebrity events Sunday. I went to the Smallville reunion. Because this was the first time Tom Welling, who played Clark Kent back on Smallville, the first time he'd ever been to Dragon Con. I don't think he's done conventions at all much in the past, but he's finally starting to do some now. It was Tom Welling, who was Clark Kent, and Michael Rosenbaum, who played Lex Luthor. and I've seen Michael speak a couple times before. He's hilarious. They're great together. Mm-hmm. This was probably one of my favorite like celebrity Q&A type panels I'd ever gone to with just these two guys from Smallville. Yeah, Michael Rosenbaum is a nut.
Yes.
He starts going on stage. He's like, can I get a wireless? And he didn't. And then he just started yelling for, like, where's my wireless? He wants a wireless mic because they're in a big ballroom. But he gets off the stage and just starts working the room. He was running around the room to hug people and goof around. At one point, he climbed up onto the platform where one of the camera operators is, because there's big full-size video cameras. But yeah, he climbed up and took over the camera just so he could zoom it in on Tom Welling. Playing around with the camera. Just a total nut.
Welling's like, Lex, don't embarrass me.
Tom was very funny too, but seemed quite,
a little subdued.
Quite tame by comparison to what Lex Luthor was up to. After that, I jumped right from that one to another celebrity Q&A kind of thing. And that was the Arrowverse cast panel. They just gathered up a bunch of the actors from Arrow and Flash and Legends of Tomorrow. So this was Victor Garber.
Yeah.
Who I know you're a fan of. And I don't think he'd ever been to Dragon Con before either.
No, I think this was new for him this year.
We remember him from Alias, right, originally?
Alias. And before that, he's a Broadway guy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He can sing.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. And he's a half of Firestorm.
Mm-hmm.
No, because Firestorm, the superhero Firestorm Cornflake, I don't know if you know, it's two guys that fuse together to make one superhero Firestorm.
I was not aware of this.
Yeah. Brandon Routh was on this panel. I'd never seen him in person before either. And originally, we first knew him as Superman from Superman Returns, a deeply flawed movie.
Yeah.
But he was fine in the part, though. He certainly looked the part.
You know,
they wanted a Chris Reeve type to take up that part.
He's a fine-looking guy.
And they got it. And these days, he plays the Atom. He's Ray Palmer, the Atom, on DC Legends of Tomorrow. Tom Cavanaugh was on the panel. Mm-hmm. And Tom is Harry Wells on The Flash.
He's played multiple versions of the same character.
Oh, they're out of control.
Universes.
They have like a Council of Harrys.
We have
the Council of Michaels at Dragon Con. They've done Council of Harrys on The Flash, where he pulls a whole bunch of alternate versions from different parallel dimensions so they can all have a conference together.
Yeah.
It's pretty ridiculous. And John Barrowman was also on this panel.
One of the most popular guests.
People freak out over John Barrowman. Who I didn't even know. I'm not a Doctor Who person, of course, so I didn't know anything about John Barrowman until he started doing Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And he's Malcolm Merlyn on Arrow. And I know he gets really wacky in a lot of his appearances at conventions. And I've seen him speak two or three times, but it's always on these Arrowverse cast kind of things. And he behaves himself
good. Yeah.
On these things.
I was wondering. I was going to be like, on a scale of 1 to Lex Luthor.
Yeah,
he was very well behaved, just stayed in his place on stage with everybody else.
I know he respects his fellow actors, but give him the stage by himself and he's going to go nuts.
I heard about some pretty outrageous things happening just this year during the John Barrowman appearances. I'm not even going to say what he did.
Oh, no.
But people love it.
Not safe for flop talk?
Right.
Oh, dear.
I had a panel right after that. Speaking of The Flash, I did a panel about The Flash. Flash Season 4, trying to outthink the thinker. This was with the husband half of that husband and wife team that write those tie-in novels together. Clay Griffith was on this panel with me. And also a lady named Beth was on this panel who she remembered me right away from... we did Riverdale together last year.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and she's great. So we've kept in touch since this Flash panel. So that was fun. After that, now, remember, I think I mentioned during our preview show that our friend Kate from Strange Animals Podcast, she would be making her Dragon Con panelist debut. They put her on a thing.
Yes.
For the podcasting track. Kate was on a panel called How to Start Your Own Indie Podcast. Which is, she has certainly done that.
Yeah.
And when I saw the lineup for this panel in the schedule, I thought, oh, come on. This is all my worlds are colliding on this panel. Because also on the panel with Kate were two people from The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
Two These novellas. Are
friends of ours, two of the novella brothers. There was a novella substitution because the schedule said Steve and Bob. But it was actually Steve and Jay.
Okay.
Yeah, I did run into Bob very briefly, but Steve and Jay from Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, which is a fantastic show and great guys, friends of ours. I played Survivor with them earlier this year.
Yes.
You may recall, played and won.
Yeah, down you in beat Connecticut. Another one of the novellas.
Absolutely.
Every time I see a ping pong ball, I think of you.
I did not let them forget. When I said hi to them, I said, I haven't seen you guys since Survivor. Remember? Remember who won? So, Steve and Jay were there. And also from ESO Network, moderating this panel, was our own director, Mike Faber. Plus, there were two other women on the panel as well, Lauren and Tiffany, who do other indie podcasts of their own. But that lineup was freaking me out when I saw it, because these are four people I knew on this panel from three totally different areas,
right.
You know, who, and they did not know each other at all. I was like frantically trying to introduce people before it started.
The glue that held them together.
I was front and center for my Worlds Colliding on the podcast panel, and it was great. Kate was great.
She's awesome.
She is awesome. So nice job, Kate, doing a Dragon Con panel for the first time. Here's something weird we did after that. I was on the panel for The Cat from Outer Space. And this is something that started as a joke, just during the planning stages of the Sci-Fi Classics track. We're just mentioning shows that were having like an anniversary year, movies there, and Cat from Outer Space is 40 years old this year. That's from 78. And I think Joe and Gary just mentioned it just as a joke, and people got very excited about the idea of The Cat from Outer Space. So it grew into, all right, are we really going to do this?
Yes!
We will have a panel and discuss and then watch The Cat from Outer Space. And this was not late night, pay your way out of the room charity thing. This was prime time, Sunday night. Come in this room and watch The Cat from Outer Space with us.
Just discussing this, I have to say, Kevin, I've seen you smile plenty of times, but to talk about The Cat from Outer Space, that's one of the biggest smiles I've ever seen.
How can you say the words, The Cat from Outer Space? When you're taking somebody's picture, that should be the line. All right, everybody say The Cat from Outer Space. We had some other ESO personnel who were not able to be at Dragon Con this year. They were on The Cat from Outer Space panel anyway. We got on speakerphone, we got Debbie and Dr. Scott Vigay from Dr. Geek's laboratory.
We
got them on the phone to discuss Cat from Outer Space with us.
Well, that's appropriate.
The Vigay family, it turns out, way into The Cat from Outer Space. And in fact, they have a cat, and the cat is way into The Cat from Outer Space. The cat watches the movie like every day.
The cat is like my dog.
Yes.
TV watching.
Your dog watches TV.
The two of them should get together and watch TV together.
The Vigay's cat watches The Cat from Outer Space and has the collar.
Aww.
Has the glowing space collar.
Nice.
So I'm so glad that we were able to get the Vigay's on the phone for this. And we watched the movie. The movie's wonderful. You know, Ken Berry, Sandy Duncan, both colonels from MASH are in it.
Would you say that was Sandy Duncan's best role?
Second only to her Wheat Thins commercial, and coming in just ahead of the Hogan family.
Yep.
Yes. Yes. It's amazing. Yeah, you've got Harry Morgan and McLean Stevenson, who are the two colonels on MASH. Those guys are both in this movie together.
I'm going to need to watch it again sometime.
And even Alan Young, who was Wilbur on Mr. Ed, is in this movie. He's the veterinarian, I think, in the movie. And I just like that because it's another talking animal thing that the same guy is in. That's his thing. The very end of the movie, at the very end, there's one more freaky celebrity appearance because there's a judge. There's a courtroom scene right at the end. And the cat makes the judge float up and hover over the room. That judge is Sorrel Book. That's Boss Hogg from the Dukes of Hazzard.
No!
Yes. Everybody is in The Cat from Outer Space. And we watched it at Dragon Con. That was magnificent. We had our ESO recording after that. So it's not an official convention thing, but this was everybody from the ESO network gathered in a secret location. Not the secret food court. Even more secret than the secret food court. But very, very high up in the Westin. Because we had this crazy, gorgeous view. I think there's a picture in our photo album, I think. I could not believe the view from this room. I counted, I think, 18 people in the room
at
one point.
That's a lot.
So we got a bunch of people, all ESO personnel, gathered. And we just like to do a big group recording together at DragonCon every year. And it's always Sunday night. So we just kind of talk about the convention experience so far. And I think they're going to make a Patreon-exclusive podcast out of that at some point. I believe that's the plan. You'll be able to... It was a good show, I think. It was like we talked for almost 2 hours, I think. And that'll be a fun show. The pie was flowing.
I was going to ask, did somebody take a swig of pie on my behalf?
Mike Faber supplied us all with pie. Yeah, pie is a super delicious, super potent, scary beverage that people make for Dragon Con. It's an apple pie flavored, boozy, dangerous beverage.
Yes.
And Mike brought a lot of it this year.
Dangerous is my favorite kind of beverage.
Yes, that was a great recording anyway, so I hope everybody gets to hear it. And watch the ESO Patreon account and sign up for ESO Network's Patreon. Because that's going to be a fun show. I would like to hear it myself. And after that, believe it or not, it was super late. And I was just hanging out with Brittany and Martha and Sergio and Jessica and our wicked geeky friends. We just wandered about and we're hanging out together. We ran into some more people after that. That's when I ran into Brandon the Shapeshifter, actually, who's a brilliant, wonderful customer. We were just talking about him last night. He's local, but he goes down there every year and just these amazing, like they light up glowing with makeup.
Yeah.
And he's fantastic. And I regret that I only saw him for like 2 seconds late Sunday night, but I said hi to Brandon. The other great customers, I forget these guys' names every year. These are friends of Brittany and Martha. These two guys, they were in Ace and Gary costumes, the ambiguously gay duo from Saturday Night Live. But they were Ace and Gary, but also they were also Charles Nelson Reilly. They had the glasses,
that's a weird
and the
crossover.
Cap and the scarf and the pipes.
He's not ambiguously gay.
Unambiguous. But yeah, they were doing Ace and Gary, Charles Nelson Reilly combo. They even had little blue cards with them to do like match games. Yeah. And I think they're
boobs.
Local. Yes, the answer is always boobs. If you're playing match game, just write boobs on your card. You're probably going to get a match. I always forget these guys' names. I think they're local. They're from up here. But
oh, cool.
Very, very funny, cool guys. Anyway, all right, that was Sunday night. Monday is the final day of Dragon Con, and I got up, I think I got 3 hours of sleep after I separated myself from Britt and Martha and Ace and Gary, and because I was back in the Classics track room at 8:30 a.m. for the Superheroversary panel, which I was not officially scheduled to be on, but I know Michael Bailey wanted me on it, and I'm always happy to do it, and I think that we only had three people on stage, so I was the fourth, so I did hop up there to participate in Superheroversary, and that was with Joe Crow and Michael Bailey. And also Darren. Darren's from the Legion of Substitute Podcasters podcast, because he's a Legion of Superheroes expert and fan, which is why we wanted him on Superheroverse.
Yeah.
I can't believe they got Darren up at 8:30 for this.
Oh.
But there he was. And people also know Darren from the ESO Dragon Con report.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the regular voices you hear on the Dragon Con report podcast every month. Great guy. And yeah, we were talking about just all the comics characters that had an anniversary year this year. We covered Brainiac, we did Bizarro, the Legion of Superheroes, of course, Firestorm, the previously mentioned Firestorm, is 40 years old this year.
Cool.
And also, just for fun, Mike threw into the presentation the Smurfs.
Yay!
So we got some Smurfs talking. In between panels after that, here's where the weird thing that was born out of our Dunkin' Donuts lunch earlier in the convention. Somehow Michael Bailey and I got to talking about either Air Supply or Jim Steinman or Bonnie Tyler. Somehow we got on that subject.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael mentioned the Bonnie Tyler version of Making Love Out of Nothing at All, which, of course, we mainly know is an Air Supply song.
Yes.
But Jim Steinman wrote that song. And this is the guy that wrote all the classic Meatloaf songs, you know, that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And Total Eclipse of the
Total
Heart.
Total Eclipse of the Heart for Bonnie Tyler. Michael had asked me if I had heard or was aware of the Bonnie Tyler version of Making Love Out of Nothing at All. And I couldn't remember if I'd ever heard it or not. So I said, you know, maybe not. And Michael said, again, we're at the Dunkin' Donuts, the secret food court.
Uh-huh.
Michael said, well, you know, later on this weekend, let's play it back in the track room. So, yeah, flash forward now to a Monday morning and before the Incredible Hulk panel was about to start. And suddenly the room is filled with the haunting sounds of Ms. Bonnie Tyler singing Making Love Out of Nothing at All. And then something really weird happened. Totally unplanned. I picked up a wireless mic. Joe Crow picked up a wireless mic. And Joe and I just started mostly lip-syncing, a little bit of actual singing, but kind of lip-syncing a very dramatic, scary, weird duet of Bonnie Tyler's Making Love Out of Nothing at All. Just to, you know, entertain the people that were in the room at the time. However, Rachel, one of the Classics track volunteers, and she just works that track room all weekend, and she's fantastic. Rachel, because she's also evil, started shooting a video of Joe and I.
Yay!
And our performance. So, like, right after that happened, the video was online immediately. So there is video evidence, and it's very, very silly. So if you want to see me and Joe doing like a Bonnie Tyler, Making Love Out of Nothing at All lip sync in the Sci-Fi Classics track room at Dragon Con, that video is out there.
How does her version compare to the version we know and love?
It's very similar. Again, it's a Jim Steinman song,
right.
So they all have that sound.
Right, I can picture her singing it.
There's a couple of differences in that there's a weird kind of opera singing background vocal that pops up here and there, which I found very startling each time. You can see me kind of freak out and start looking nervously around the room when the opera singing starts on the video. And also the football verse in the lyrics, you know, there's a football themed I can make the runner stumble, I can make the final block, I can make every tackle at the sound of the whistle, make all that whole the football verse. I believe Bonnie has a different set of lyrics, so that there's an alternate verse that she sings there, I think. because it completely tripped me up during my lip sync. Mm-hmm. I was like, uh-oh, Bonnie's singing something else. I don't know what's going on anymore.
Bonnie doesn't sing about football.
No, Bonnie does not sing about football. That's where she draws the line. She sings about total eclipses.
Yes,
and holding out for a hero.
Yeah,
holding
does.
Out for a hero. So that's something that happened anyway, and that was leading into the Incredible Hulk panel. Actually started a little bit late because we all got up on stage for the Hulk panel and just continued discussing Jim Steinman.
Oh, goodness.
For like 5 minutes.
There should have been like a Hulk opera written by Jim Steinman.
I think we need a Jim Steinman panel next year, if not a Jim Steinman track.
Yes.
Oh, I want to be on the Jim Steinman panel.
Yes.
So the Incredible Hulk panel was after that, and that's again with Michael Bailey and with Joe and Gary, the directors, and I was up there and just talking and some other people, I think, for the 40th anniversary of the Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno Incredible Hulk. And Lou Ferrigno was like just down the hall during this panel. He wasn't there. He wasn't at our panel, but it was nice to know. He was
in the building.
Just around the corner practically. He was right down the hall.
He's filming a special just down the hall.
I found it strangely comforting that Lou was in the immediate area while we were talking about his old show. It was great. And this was easy lifting for me because Michael Bailey was there. And I knew Michael knows everything about the Incredible Hulk TV show. So just whatever topic came up, anything, any guest, any episode, Michael knows it. So he was right in there to fill in whatever detail we needed. He was great. What I did bring to the panel is, I think I have it here. This is something I learned about from Ken Reed, our buddy Ken over on the TV Guidance Counselor. I think whenever the Incredible Hulk TV series comes up on TV Guidance Counselor, Ken always mentions that there's a list online. Somebody made a list of every reason that David Banner transforms into the Incredible Hulk. Because, you know, something always has to set him off.
It.
Something triggers his transformation of the Hulk on every episode. Somebody made a list of everything that makes him turn into the Hulk over the course of the whole series. So I printed out that list.
Yeah.
I found it. I printed it. I brought it to the panel. And at some point during the panel, I broke it out and said, hey, everybody.
Did you read the whole thing?
I did not read the whole thing. I pulled out some highlights because it starts out kind of, it's being punched out, bit by a dog, quicksand, things like that.
Yeah.
Flat tire. That's how it all started. I think
sure.
The very first transformation.
Yeah.
He's out there, you know, trying to change the tire. Car crash. You know, there's a lot of basic stuff like that. Having a row of computers fall on him. And that's 1978. That's
right, that's like our NASA computer.
Yeah, computers were big back then. It's like our supercomputer.
Yeah.
But then the reasons start getting weirder after that. So
sure, they got to up the game.
I marked a few of them, like placed in a small room with a ravenous Black Panther. being forced to land a 747 without any training or instructions or help.
Yeah, that's what you want, the Hulk landing your 747.
Hulk smash plane!
Oh, here's another airplane one. Being pushed out of a plane at 30,000 feet by a mean guy who yells, "You're going to land a lot sooner than the rest of us."
Oh!
Flying Hulk.
Being fed poisoned sushi. Turned him into the Hulk.
Oh.
Couple more that I flagged here. Being lassoed by mean cowboys and dragged behind their horses across a bunch of dirt and rocks.
That would have been a big surprise.
Imagine when those cowboys turn back and they're dragging the Incredible Hulk.
And he's dragging back.
One more. This might be my favorite. Being thrown under a New Orleans Mardi Gras parade float by a mean guy in a gorilla suit.
There are a lot of mean guys in David Banner's world.
Yes, everybody was mean. So that was a fun panel. And thanks, Ken, for making me aware of this list, because people enjoyed the list. And you can Google that and find it. It's a very, very, very funny list. The other thing to note about the Hulk panel is that at the end of the panel, Gary said, you know, there's only one way this panel can end. And we put on the closing end of the Hulk episode, the sad walking away piano music started playing. And we all just quietly got up and picked up our bags and hung our heads and looked sad and slowly walked out of the room. We actually ended the panel that way.
Yes.
I don't think anybody videoed the Hulk walking away exit, because I have not seen any video.
I can picture
They were
it,
sure to get me singing with Bonnie Tyler. That is on video.
Well, that's something. On their phone.
Yeah, Rachel used
it. Rachel would have taped it, but...
Her phone is full of me screaming, making love out of nothing at all. I had one final panel after that, but it was a big one. The other panel that I brought the computer for to have a video presentation, and that was Classic Sci-Fi Court.
The Revenge of Howard the Duck.
Yes. Last year we did Howard the Duck. We just played that on the show a few weeks ago, so people can hear last year's Sci-Fi Court. That was an 8:30 a.m. panel last year, and we were kind of trying to figure out the format and how it was as we were doing it. And on stage, we were sort of figuring out, finding our way. So this year we're in prime time now. Now it's deeper into the day. Had a big crowd and I think an even better, stronger, crazier show.
Nice.
Joe, you know, Judge Joe Crow really suited up this year. He had this crazy, I think it was a Ric Flair, the wrestler Ric Flair, who was a guest at Dragon Con this year. So it was like a sparkly red robe like Ric Flair would wear. That was his judge's robe. And he had the wig, like a big white goofy wig, like an old-timey kind of judge, you know. So Joe was in costume. They had the gavel and the thing that you bang the gavel on. And the idea was we were defense attorneys defending what are generally considered horrible movies. Mm-hmm. And so we had Michael Williams was there. He defended Dracula 2000 very passionately.
I'm not even sure I'm familiar with that movie at all.
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
But I know all about it now.
Yes.
From Michael's presentation. And Gary Mitchell, defended The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Uh-huh.
Also quite convincingly. Wow. His main point was Sean Connery. He was like, everybody, Sean Connery's in this.
Yes. Well, Sean Connery's also in Highlander, which is really, really bad. I know it's a cult classic, but it's really bad.
Zardoz.
Okay, I've never even seen
old school 70s Zardoz. I've never seen that either.
It's also in Dragonheart.
Yeah, we love Sean Connery from so many very weird things. And Joe Crow himself, mm-hmm. they switched. Joe and Gary switched who's judge and who's defense attorney because Joe switched to defense mode and defended the Star Wars Holiday Special.
I have been waiting to hear how this went.
It was brilliant.
Nice.
He had his statements prepared and spoke very passionately about all things Star Wars Holiday Special. He covered every horrifying aspect of it. All the Harvey Korman stuff and the B. Arthur stuff.
B. Arthur does not need any defense.
All the Wookiee stuff. We love it. And my defense this year was of the 1998 Lost in Space movie.
Now, this I've actually seen, unlike Howard the Duck.
And yeah, I was working on my presentation even during Dragon Con.
Yeah.
I was still tweaking it, perfecting it, trying to make sure that I could win over the people about the pretty lousy Lost in Space movie. And I think we were all quite successful.
So nice. And you were the only repeat defense attorney?
Was I? I think I was. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, hopefully they'll let me do it again next year. Because there's a lot more bad movies out there, and I will defend every last one of them.
All right. You gotta start thinking of what you'll defend next year.
Yes. So that was the last thing I had on my schedule for the weekend was Sci-Fi Court. And I kind of said...
Combat Academy.
Ooh, there's a thought. Your favorite, Combat Academy. Love it. It's a TV movie, but then so was Star Wars Holiday Special.
Yes.
Some would say the Holiday Special is not even a movie at all.
No.
Just really, really
weird.
It's
a variety show.
One thing that Joe said that I really like to think of, it just sounds so bizarre in retrospect, but the Star Wars Holiday Special, that was the second thing.
Yeah.
Of anything Star Wars. You had the movie, the first movie, the next thing we got, the next thing that existed in all of Star Wars is the Holiday Special.
Yes. So, and I saw it.
Show a little respect, people.
It bounced back, which means it couldn't have been that bad.
So I said my goodbyes and left the classics room after that, classics track room, not expecting to return or see most of these people, you know, kind of wrapped up the weekend there. And I was unpacking my stuff and I realized I left my mouse, my computer mouse, was still in the classics track room. So I went back to get my mouse and then that led to I ended up hooking up with a bunch of people for lunch after that. So we had a big big lunch group post-Dragon Con lunch after that, which was nice with the Fabers and the Faulkners and Sue and Gary and Darren. Had a nice group of us. Went over to the Metro Diner, you know?
Yes.
There's a giant 24-hour diner right outside of one of the Dragon Con hotels.
And it's tall. It's like has many. It's like an Escher
sort
of thing. It's got stairs going up to all sorts of levels.
It's a big, weird place.
And they play loud music.
They're loud. It's crazy. It was great. It had delightful.
Oh yeah, it's great.
Delightful lunch there at the Metro Diner. So that was nice and nice way to wrap up my Dragon Con weekend. So yeah, I did a lot. I missed a lot. You have to miss a lot, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good friends of ours that I did not see at all. A whole bunch of people that I really felt sorry that I missed. And a lot of people are from the skeptic crowd and the science crowd. They tend to congregate at the Hilton Bar, one of the Dragon Con hotels. So anytime I was walking through that area, I'd do a sweep through the bar just to see, are any of my friends here? And they never were.
Uh-huh.
We tried to meet up with some of them a couple times. Didn't work. So some people I saw very, very briefly. Mm-hmm. Some people I saw not at all. I never even got over to the comic book artist area, which is in like a whole separate faraway building and a very crowded building because that's where the vendor rooms are.
It's hard to get through
and
there.
I tried to get over there once and it was such an insane mob outside the building that I just backed off. And I
think last year I went there on Monday.
Yeah. So I regret that I totally missed the comics room for the second year in a row.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to see the Tiki Zombie booth. I totally missed, you know, where Mike is selling all his tiki zombie stuff. And in fact, we should say the book is out. The new Mike brought with him the new ESO anthology. ESO Tales of the Station Volume 3 is out. And I have not read the whole thing yet. I've only read a couple of the stories so far, but it does include a story from me. I contributed another weird short story to this book, just like last year. So yeah, it makes a nice companion piece to last year's Volume 2. My stories are connected.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah, they are cool. Somewhat connected. So you want to read Volume 2, and you want to read Volume 3, and you want to read all the other stories as well, and Volume 1. I'm not in Volume 1,
right.
But other cool stories are in Volume 1. All books are still available, I think, and there's links and stuff through the ESO website. But yeah, I'm very excited about this new book being out, though, and it's beautiful. I mean, beautiful cover art once again. So I hope everybody enjoys the book, and we'll talk more about it hopefully at some point. But yeah, I totally missed the Tiki Zombie booth. I didn't get to see Sarah Richard, our friend Sarah, you know, great comic artist. She was there. Totally missed her and all the other comic artists, I'm sad to say. I ran into George Perez once, mm-hmm. which was nice, because he was just kind of working the room. George Perez just runs around Dragon Con all weekend, just taking pictures of all the costumers. And usually they have no idea that their picture is being taken by and with George Perez.
George Perez.
Who has drawn all these characters in comic books for real. Oh, we got to wrap this up. So as far as costumes, you know, there's always like the super meta costumes every year. The Dragon Con themed costumes we always enjoy. The carpet costumes, of course, are still a big thing. And
they live even though the carpet does not.
The carpet is gone. Somebody a couple of years ago was dressed as one of the elevators at the Hyatt. So they're just hanging around the Hyatt.
Yeah.
They were like, you recognize this? No, what are you? And then he points up, like,
yeah.
See, elevator. on one of the Hyatt elevators. Somebody, I didn't see this guy, but Kate saw a guy this year. He was in the Marriott, and he was dressed as the Marriott, like the whole building. He was dressed like the building, the Marriott Hotel. But people do all kinds of stuff like that every year. Anyway, my favorite like Dragon Con meta-type costume this year was there was a girl dressed as a Dragon Con membership postcard. Because when you register for Dragon Con in advance, you buy your membership, and then they send you a postcard.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring that postcard, your registration, to get your badge. She was dressed as the postcard.
Wow.
That was a nice costume.
That was brilliant. Yeah, she looked very cute and very funny, so I like that. There was a Katy Perry group.
Oh?
Yeah, there were like five or six girls all doing different versions of Katy Perry costumes together.
And wasn't our friend Liz doing Left Shark at one point?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
she was not with the kitty. She was certainly a shark of some type. She was in a shark suit at one point. I saw that
she
picture.
She could pirouette and be a Sharknado.
Yes, I barely saw Liz this year. Uh-huh. I saw her super quick, two or three times. I saw our friend the Flying Spaghetti Monster, of course.
Of course, every year.
Every year that woman does the Flying Spaghetti Monster suit. A popular theme this year I noticed was GLOW. Gorgeous ladies of wrestling.
That's awesome.
A lot of GLOW costumes this year, especially Zoya, mm-hmm. the Russian, the Soviet GLOW girl, Zoya the Destroyer.
Yeah, that's a striking costume.
I must have seen a dozen Zoyas.
Nice.
And I love them all. There was Karate Kid. There were a lot of Cobra Kai Dojo costumes around. And
awesome.
I saw one Daniel and Miyagi together as well. Very cool. I saw a couple of guys. There may have been more of them, but there were just two of them when I saw them. But there were these two guys. One of them was Captain Picard
mm-hmm.
from Star Trek. One of them was Captain Cold, as in Flash villain Captain Cold. Captain Picard and Captain Cold staying there together, but they're not the straight costumes. Their costumes were patterned with big hats, just like Captain Crunch.
Oh, cool.
These Captain Crunch versions of Captain Picard and Captain Cold.
Yeah, it would be cool if there were a bunch more of them.
There might have been more of them. I think one of them might have said that there was a third guy that wasn't there, so I'm not sure. But they were wonderful, though. I love those guys.
It would have been cool to see a Captain Crunch hat on a kangaroo.
There was a Captain Kangaroo costumer last year.
I remember
and again,
that.
Yeah, I passed him during my tour, so I didn't get a picture. But there was a fantastic Captain Kangaroo. I didn't see him this year. This year, I also failed to get a photo because I just passed in a hallway. There was a guy as Steve Martin from The Jerk in the gas station attendant uniform.
Because you've had an idea for a Jerk costume as well.
Yes, I came up with a horrifying Jerk costume a few years ago. Now, not for me to do,
yes,
but here's my idea. I throw this out to the world. If anybody has the nerve to do this, do you remember in The Jerk, there's a scene where Steve Martin, he's reading the letter from Marie, was it? From his girlfriend, from Bernadette mm-hmm. Peters, reading the letter, and he's in the bathtub. And he jumps up out of the bathtub and goes running outside to try to catch her because she's leaving him. So he runs out of the house, out of the bathtub, naked. And there's a woman is standing out there. Some other woman is out there who just shrieks in horror.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, sorry. And there's a dog walking by. He calls the dog over, picks up the dog to hold in front of him. Then He's still not completely covered up, you know? There's another dog. He scoops up another dog. So now he's standing there on the street soaking wet, holding two dogs, one in front of him, one behind him. And I thought, there's a Dragon Con costume, mm-hmm. you know? What if you got like little tiny flesh-colored shorts
yeah.
and
yeah.
attached a couple of dogs to each side of it? And there's Steve Martin from The Jerk, maybe a gray wig.
Yeah. You know,
get the hair
or,
color.
Or a dude who's already yeah, gray
hair. Or just let the years go by.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a fantastic costume?
Yes.
Yeah, maybe a late night Dragon Con costume.
Yes.
Yeah, the costumes get skimpier at night.
And horrifying.
Yeah, so that's my idea, gentlemen out there. I'm not doing it, but somebody do Steve Martin with two dogs from The Jerk. Anyway, this guy this year was doing Steve Martin work in the gas station.
Yeah.
He hates those cannons. That guy. My favorite costume of the year, though, I think this is my very favorite. You just watched Meatballs this year for the first time.
I did.
Morty from Meatballs, the guy in charge of all the counselors. Yeah, hi, Mickey, guy.
Mickey,
the nerd with the big mustache and that they mess with him while he's asleep
yeah,
every night.
Yeah, they always put his bed somewhere.
There was a guy in a perfect Morty costume
oh.
with the yellow shirt that says when the hand goes up, the mouth goes shut on it and the stupid hat and the mustache. And it, like from the other side of the lobby, instantly recognizable.
Yes.
I just freaked out when I saw this guy. And then when I got up closer, there he is. He's doing his Morty costume. And there was a girl sitting on the floor next to him in front of, and she's in like a Camp North Star outfit. And they had like they built a fake campfire.
Uh-huh.
So she's sitting in front of a campfire.
Yeah.
And they were offering, they offered me, would I like some champagne? Because, you know, they passed the bottle of champagne around. They offered me champagne and marshmallows.
Nice.
Which I did not partake of, but I like that they had those available.
Mm-hmm.
But they were great. So that might have been the Morty from Meatballs. That was the costume of the year for me, I think.
I think last year you saw a Caddyshack group that you really liked?
That was a couple of years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, Caddyshack costume group, like four or five of them together. They were wonderful as well. I love those kind of goofy costumes.
We gotta pick an 80s movie to do costumes.
Costume of? Okay. Let's figure this out. What should our group costume be from an 80s movie? Hiding out with John Cryer. I did see Annabeth Gish. I didn't talk to her.
Yeah.
Just walking through the celebrity autograph room, I did see Hiding Out's Annabeth Gish.
Right,
was at Dragon Con.
We'll put some thought into this.
I would angle for Short Circuit.
Short Circuit
mm-hmm.
would be good.
But yeah. I would really like to be Johnny Five if we do that.
let's work on that. All right, yikes, that's enough Dragon Con talk. We've gone on way, way, way too long as usual. I will do my quick plug, and then you do your wrap-up of the show plugs, and then we'll get out of here. My quick plug is we're getting very close now, folks, to After These Messages. That is the band that I am a part of for one night only. That night is Tuesday, September 25th, and you've got to somehow get yourself to Haverhill, Massachusetts, to a place called The Lasting Room. This new band, After These Messages, it's me, it's Ed from Sponge Awareness, it's Mike, and it's Carl. The four of us will be performing as After These Messages, and we're just doing TV theme songs all night. That's the plan. Please be there.
You can't miss it.
Oh, yeah.
You kick yourself if you miss it.
This is going to be crazy. Cornflake, get us out of here.
Well, I'm sure you've got some great Dragon Con pictures up on our Facebook page.
Yes, we do. The Facebook photo album from Dragon Con is up already.
Facebook.com/Flopcast. We're on Twitter. Our handle is @Flopcast. We have Instagram, too, the_Flopcast, and our very own website, flopcast.net. All places where you can find the Flopcast in between shows.
Yes. Well, Cornflake, you know what we should do maybe is put together like a Play-Doh costume in time for Play-Doh Day.
Ooh.
We could be big
just
tubs
cans of Play-Doh. Yeah.
Big tubs of Play-Doh.
You know what my
or
favorite...
Or just a big gray blob.
Yeah.
My favorite...
We could be new Play-Doh and old Play-Doh. Show the whole...
Yes. Green blob. My favorite Play-Doh playset was the barbershop.
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Of course.
Where the hair comes out... Hair and beard comes out of these little...
We need to make a wig of Play-Doh looking...
Yes.
Freaky Play-Doh hair.
And all then right. It doubles the spaghetti afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do that. Not to wear a Dragon Con, just
now.
Just to wear around the house.
We'll work on it this afternoon.
All right. See you next week.
Peace and Play-Doh.
Did you know the ESO Network has a brand new Patreon? That's right. We're asking for your help, and you could do it for as little as $1 a month. Don't fret. All your favorite shows will still be available for free as always. But you can get exclusive podcasts and more not heard anywhere else but on our Patreon. To sign for the ESO Network Patreon is easy. All you have to do is go to ESOpodcast.com and click on the link. With your support of the ESO Network, it's you who will reap the rewards.
Hey, Cornflake, here's the after show.
I have a final reflection on this show and DragonCon.
We should say that the mayor has abandoned us for the after show.
Rightly so.
I do not blame her. What is your final thing for DragonCon?
Well, we were talking about the cast members of Sesame Street that were at DragonCon. And at the end of every Sesame Street episode, the show was brought to you by a letter and a number.
Letters and numbers.
And I think this episode of the Flawcast was brought to you by the number 2,000.
How so?
2,000 people missing from the count of DragonCon this year, with the number slightly going down.
Right. The estimates were 82,000 last year and 80,000 this year. So we might be down a couple thousand people.
Sure. Dracula 2000 defended.
The movie Dracula 2000, yes.
And 2,000 statues of Liberty could be made out of all the Play-Doh that has been sold.
That's a good point.
So the Flawcast is brought to you by the number 2,000. Mic drop.
Or a drop of mics.
That's right.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.